Okay, turn to Genesis chapter 11 as we continue our study here. It was 2 weeks ago because I skipped out last week. gave you a break. Last time we talked about the Tower of Babel and the situation that took place there. Again, God's judgment on the human race because of their rebellion against him. I'm just going to read 2 verses 8 and 9. So the Lord scattered them abroad from thence upon the face of all the earth, and they left off to build the city. Therefore is the name of it called Babel, because the Lord did confound the language of all the earth. And from thence did the Lord scatter them abroad upon the face of the earth. With the conclusion of this, now is as good a time as any to bring up the subject that some people seem to can't get through their heads. How could we have, obviously at this point it says, Scripture tells us that the people were spread out. Obviously, if I can't understand what Stuart is saying, I'm not going to hang around Stuart very long, because what he's talking sounds like nothing to me. So I'm going to find somebody that understands what I say and I can understand what they're saying, and we're going to kind of hang out together. And that's exactly what took place. People formed into groups of those who they could understand, and they scattered. They moved away to start their own villages, their own tribe, whatever you want to call it. Along with this comes the question of how can we have such diversity within the human race? How could that happen? How could that develop? How can we have, white, Asian, black, everything in between, and even the physical similarities within certain, I'm going to call them language groups or people groups, because there is only one race, right? One human race. There's not different races, although that's what the world likes to say is, everybody of a different race. I found some information. I am no scientist, but several different places I found some information. It's interesting. Well, I'll get to that in a second. This is from Answers in Genesis. I want to read a few paragraphs here. It says, different people groups developed after the flood from the descendants of Noah. After the flood, all people spoke the same language. We talked about that. Chapter 11 in Genesis explains that God confused their languages at the Tower of Babel to force them to scatter over the earth. That's part of God's plan. They weren't doing what God wanted, as well as rebelling against him, as well as wanting to be their own gods, as willing to make their own decisions, as well as not liking the curse that had been brought upon them, whatever it was. This scattering isolated portions of the human gene pool geographically. The physical characteristics, and here's where it gets interesting. Oh, wait a minute. I forgot. Before I start, who can roll your tongue? Can roll your tongue up in a U-shape. Can you? How many? Raise your hand if you can. Okay, a few can. My wife can. Some of my kids can. Some of them can't. Do you know why you can do that? It's not because you learned and taught yourself. Where's Emily? She thinks she can because she taught herself how to. You know why? Why is that you can do that? Pardon me? Genetics. Your parents have dominant and recessive genes, and depending upon what genes you get determines whether or not you can do that. Aaron loves this study in genetics, how certain traits are certain ways. You know why your kids look like you? Because you've passed down certain genes to them. You still working on that, Stuart? No, it's a trait that's available because of genetics. So understanding that, The physical characteristics of various ethnic groups developed in these isolated groups during the sorting and isolation of genetic information already present in man's DNA. So the genetics for being able to be different, whether it's Asian type eyes or different facial features or even color of skin, it's all in your DNA. You know, man studies DNA, right? Man knows everything there is to know about DNA, right? Not even close. Man thinks he knows all sorts of things, and his study even in DNA is like this much out of volumes of what's involved in DNA. Man just guessing. The information that in that DNA had originally been present in Adam's DNA and just been shuffled and sorted. Therefore, the development of so-called races or people groups has nothing to do with molecules to man evolution. Adam and Eve, later Noah and his wife, probably had skin tones closer to middle brown. You know, we think about, okay, Adam and Eve, they had been white, right? I mean, sometimes we think that, right? And you say, okay, how could it go from this scale to the other end of the scale? Well, maybe they were more in the middle of the scale, and therefore it's not such a stretch to go either direction, right? Adam's DNA had to contain information for a wide variety of skin tones. Only in this way could human DNA possess the genetic variability to produce the many skin tones we now see. In the simplified illustration, and that's sort of talked about AB, even your skin tone changes, right? What changes your skin tone?
Sunshine.
The sun. So therefore, someone that's out in the sun more, their skin tone is going to be what?
Darker.
Those who stay inside and hibernate all year long, your skin tone gets what?
Lighter.
Because of melanin that's in the skin that protects you from the rays of the sun. That changes with different people groups, especially once you take, let me keep reading here. After the scattering of the people from the Tower of Babel, genetic information was sorted and isolated into many geographic areas. Certain groups lost the ability to produce children of other skin shades because of the genetic information for those skin shades was not present in their population. A very detailed explanation of this, and it talks about, you can go to Answers in Genesis and get some more information about this. So in other words, when you take a massive group of people, I don't know how many there were at the time, say there was, we talked about how many, do you remember how many different languages, and it talked about, there's about 70. So say there was 7,000 people on the earth at the time, you take about 100 people and put them in a group, and those people reproduce within that group. So the genetics that are dominant within that group are going to continue to be dominant, right? The genetics that are recessive within that group are going to tend to be not, are going to tend to not show up anymore. The same way, if you were to take a group of people now of different skin tones and put that group together, and their offspring is going to be a blend of those genetics, right? So you could genetically eliminate certain traits from certain people groups just by interspersing more people from a different people group. Same thing the other way around. So it's possible, well, it's not possible, it happened, but it's interesting, again, as people say, well, if we're all descendants from Adam and Eve, or even Noah and his children, how could there be so many people groups? How can there be such a difference? Well, you take people and isolate them, and they reproduce within that group, and those genes are dominant in that group. Doesn't mean that God couldn't have separated. Who decided who got what language? God did, right? So God could, in his wisdom, taken certain people with certain dominant and recessive genes and put them in certain groups by themselves to separate and create more diversion within the human race. Yeah, could be very well. So it's interesting that, again, as people might came to you and say, well, how could that happen? Well, now you know, because DNA says that we can, and as you isolate people. The interesting part, as I come to the end of this little discussion here, is so what? Finally, man has learned through study of DNA that it's possible. It's nice to know that it was possible. Did we have to know that it was possible through scientific approval or scientific methods? No, because God already said it took place. See what I'm saying? Just as we've talked about Genesis and different things that have happened and how this could have affected that and that might have affected this and all sorts of things. Scripture is true. The evidence is there as far as I'm concerned. I don't have to have science confirm or deny whatever is in Scripture. But it's interesting that science has finally caught up to what God shares with us in Scripture and has confirmed the truth of Scripture again, like it continues to do over and over again. Science finally has caught up with the Bible that we've had for hundreds and thousands of years. So, anyhow, so as we continue on, verse 10, and these are the generations of Shem. Now, we've already kind of talked about, remember in chapter 10, we had the descendants of Ham, Shem, and Japheth, a list there. And we know that those lists are incomplete, but those lists are there. This list here seems to follow closer to the pattern that we had in Genesis chapter 5, where it said, and Noah lived so many years and had children, and then lived so many years after those children, and then died. Except for this doesn't give us, and then died. But again, we have, anybody still have their chart? Okay, if you got that, get that out, because we're going to talk about that in a minute too. So here we have verse 10, and these are the generations of Shem. Shem was 100 years old and begat Arphaxad 2 years after the flood. And Shem lived after he begat Arphaxad 500 years and begat sons and daughters. And again, as we look through this list, like we look through the other list, this does not mean that Arphaxad was his only son and had no daughters, because it said he had other sons and daughters. This list is here because this list is those who are in the line of down to Abraham and all the way down to Christ. And Arphaxad lived 35 years and begat Salah. And Arphaxad lived after he begat Salah 403 years and begat sons and daughters. And Salah lived 30 years and begat Eber. And Salah lived after he begat Eber 403 years and begat sons and daughters. And Eber lived 430 years and begat Peleg. And Eber lived after he begat Peleg 430 years and begat sons and daughters. Remember, what's the deal with Peleg? Remember, what's his name mean? Division, scattering. And again, it's widely accepted or believed that he was named that because it was right near the time of the dispersion or the Tower of Babel when everybody was scattered. Let's continue. And Peleg lived 30 years and begat Reu. And Peleg lived after he begat Reu 209 years and begat sons and daughters. And Reu lived 230 years and begat Serug. And Reu lived after he begat Serug 207 years and begat sons and daughters. And Serug lived 30 years and begat Nahor. And Serug lived after he begat Nahor 200 years and begat sons and daughters. And Nahor lived 920 years and begat Terah. And Nahor lived after he begat Terah 119 years and begat sons and daughters. And Terah lived 70 years and begat, interesting, at the end of this, like at the end of the other list, We have the name of three sons, just like Noah begat three sons at the end. Terah lived 70 years and begat Abram, Nahor, and Haran. And we know that Abram's name later was changed to Abraham. So now we have the connection between Adam down to Noah, Noah down to Abraham. Some people believe, well, let's take a look at your chart a minute, if you still have that. It's interesting here as you look at this chart, as we did before, the lifespans, how long people lived. So we know that the average lifespan from Adam to Noah was, I think it was 900 years or something like that, approximately. Pardon me? Oh, maybe it was. Yeah, could be 915. Maybe it does. Anyhow, you notice if you're looking at your chart, or you could just listen, after the flood, Noah lived 600 years, Lamech, his father, lived 777, Methuselah 969, so those are about the amounts of years that people lived. Shem lived 600 years. Shem was alive before the flood, right? Went through the flood with his family and then survived after that. Arphaxad, his son, was 438. Salah is 433. You can get this by adding up, by the way, in scripture here. You can get these amounts in these ages. And then after Eber, which was the father of Peleg, which was named division or separation, that seems to have been named right around the time of the Tower of Babel and the separation there, all of a sudden Peleg's lifespan is what? 239 years. So we see another drastic drop, and then 239, I can't read that one, it's blue, 230, 148, 205. So you see a change in, a drastic change in lifespan. One change is after the flood, which, if you need an explanation, could be obviously the change in what? Their environment, right? Their environment all of a sudden was drastically different than it was before. And that could be a factor. Also, the fact that God didn't want them to live long could be a factor, which is just as viable to me as any other explanation. But if you want a more scientific explanation, their environment had changed completely from what it was before, which could make a major difference in lifespan.
That's where the idea of the water
right.
barrier would block out the ultraviolet rays, and supposedly ultraviolet is what ages
you. Yeah. So. Right. So there's a more scientific explanation as to why people's ages changed, which could be the explanation. I don't know. All I know is God desired that their lives were changed. When we get to Peleg and the fact that people were scattered into groups and all of a sudden their lifespan changed as well, again, could be there's all of a sudden a change in your location, a change in your environment, because now you're a small group. Now you're more dependent upon a smaller group of people instead of being in a city where you can order out your dinner every night and have it delivered and don't have to work as hard, and maybe your lifespan is longer, whatever it might be. That could be part of the change, or again, it could be just God's working through their situation, whatever it is. Because of this change, all this to say, because of this change, this drastic change in lifespan, some people seem to think that there's a gap in this genealogy, because all of a sudden they go from 300 or 400 years to 239. That's a big drop in lifespan, and everybody after that's lifespan is drastically shorter. So some seem to indicate that there's a gap here and that there's something missing. I don't see that as a necessary conclusion, but just so you know, there are some that say, well, whoa, there's a big change here in age group. There's got to be some kind of gap because, you know, it was getting narrower and narrower and narrower, and all of a sudden it's dropped off drastically. So there's got to be some kind of gap there to explain that. How else do you explain that? Again, mankind tries to come up with exceptions or reasons why there's problems with Scripture, right? Because if you can find a problem here, then there's problems other places. And if there's problems other places, then I don't have to listen to what this says, right? And that man desires to do that. Go ahead, Doug.
Yeah, there's some theories out there that it's not 900 years. It's some other type of aging system that is different now.
Yeah. Yep. Okay, take a look at your chart. Just real quick. Yeah, go ahead.
Right.
It's interesting here as you look at your chart, Shem, Arphaxad, Salah, and Eber, because of their longer lifespans, the years that they died. So if you look, those four individuals actually were still alive when Abraham was alive. So we're talking 9 generations. Well, actually, it could be more than that, because if you were 239 years old, how many generations is there in your descendants? You know, so really there's quite a few other. But anyhow, it's interesting to note that many of these individuals were still alive in Abraham's time. Now, again, I don't know which language all of these people spoke. Was some people think that Hebrew was the original language and all the rest of them are other languages, and could be that this language group stayed with these individuals? It's possible. But we know that whatever group they are in, if they're, for instance, Peleg's children are going to speak the language that he spoke, right? So if his Peleg's father, grandfather, whatever, those who were still alive, maintained the same language, then they could communicate with one another, I guess is what I'm saying. But it's interesting that these were all alive. Even Eber was still, he died after Abraham died. So he was alive the whole length of Abraham's life. It's just interesting to note these things. Noah, if you look at these dates, Noah didn't die until Terah, Abraham's father, was 128 years old. So again, the information that Noah had, if they spoke the language, could be passed down from generation to generation. He could even speak directly to Noah, again, if the language was the same language group. The father of Abraham could have spoke directly to Noah, the individual that built the ark and came through the flood, and or his son, his great-great-great-great-grandfather. It's just interesting to see with lifespans of this length who you possibly could have talked to or gotten information from. I could have come to, maybe if we were spoke the language, he could have gone directly to Noah and said, hey, tell me what happened. Tell me the information. He could have got firsthand information of how God brought them through the flood and things that took place and things that went on. Yeah.
Also goes back to that group before the flood.
Mm-hmm.
Noah could be talking to Adam's son.
Right.
Noah would be getting firsthand knowledge, and then he's now passing that firsthand knowledge on to Abraham.
Right. It's not like nowadays. If I want to know information about my great-great-great-great-grandfather, I would have to, hopefully somebody's written something down, right, from generation to generation that I could read about him, or maybe there's some kind of history that I could look. I can't go to him. I can't drive up north, you know, to wherever he lives in whatever, Mackinac City, and say, hey, Gramps, tell me about life in, you know, your life and different things that occurred. So yes, it's interesting how this information could travel. And really, you would say, well, Abraham or Terah couldn't have gotten any firsthand information. It would have been 12th or 15th hand information that he had gotten about Adam. Well, let's see, if Adam lived in somebody just before the flood, you know what I'm saying? It could be third or fourth hand, not it's been around the block 18 times before I got it, and who knows what's true. It's just interesting how God has even preserved that information. So we have our genealogy from here down to Terah, the father of Abraham. So it says, verse 27, and these are the generations of Terah. So it went from Shem down to Terah and his sons, and now it starts from Terah and continues on down. Now these are the generations of Terah. Terah begat Abram, Nahor, and Haran, and Haran begat Lot. Now there's a name that's familiar, and what goes on with Lot, we'll find out later. So Terah, Abram's father, had two other sons, at least two other sons. These are the ones that are named, Nahor and Haran. And Haran, Abram's brother, had a son named Lot. And Haran died before his father Terah in the land of his nativity in Ur of the Chaldees. So Terah lived in the city of Ur of the Chaldees. Three of his sons mentioned, Abram, Nahor, and Haran. It says that Haran died, who was the father of Lot. Just trying to keep this straight. Haran died while Terah was still in Ur of the Chaldees. Now we'll see that that's going to change here in a little bit. Just a little bit about Ur. Ur was one of the most significant and prosperous cities of its time. It was located about 10 miles west of the Euphrates River near the Persian Gulf, some 200 miles southeast of Baghdad. So there's a little information about Ur and where it was at. As we keep going here, it gives us verse 29, and Abram and Nahor, so Abram and his brother Nahor, because his brother Haran died. Abram and Nahor took them wives. The name of Abram's wife was Sarai. Now we know that her name changes later on, just like Abraham's does to Sarah. And the name of Nahor's wife, Milcah, the daughter of Haran, the father of Milcah, and the father of Iscah. Okay, did you get that? You ready? So Abram and Haran are brothers. Milcah is the daughter of Haran, right? So that's Abram's niece. It's also Abram's brother's niece. So Nahor, Abram's brother, his niece is Milcah. And the name of Nahor's wife was Milcah, the daughter of Haran. So are you telling me that Nahor married his niece? Yes. What do we find out later about Abram and Sarai? Yes, they were half brother and sister, we find out later on. Again, the restriction about marrying family members, God has not instituted that yet. More than likely, why did God institute that? Because of genetic problems and mutations within the genes when you marry your now sister. And the complications with that. And again, we've talked about this before, probably at this point there hadn't been that diversion within the gene pool yet to worry about that. So yes, he did marry his niece, excuse me, and also it talks about this other child, Iscah. But Sarai was barren and she had no child. Interesting here that that particular statement is mentioned. Because Sarai didn't have any children at this point, which is an exception to the rule, more than likely, as people married and had children, and their children had children. Whoa, okay. She did not have any at this point. We'll get started here. Verse 31, and Terah, Abram's father, took Abram, his son, and Lot, the son of Haran, so Abram's nephew, and Terah's grandson, because Lot's father had died. So grandpa took Abram, his son, Lot, his grandson, the son of Haran, his son's son, and Sarai, Abram's wife, his daughter-in-law, his son Abram's wife, and they went forth with them from Ur of the Chaldees to go to the land of Canaan, where they came unto Haran and dwelt there. So before we finish off chapter 11, we see that Terah, Abram's father, moved from Ur, where they lived, and moved to a city called Haran. Interesting, I don't know if it's got any connection or not, that Haran was actually the name of
his dead son.
Was that because he had some connection with that city? Don't know. I guess it doesn't really matter one way or the other. But we see that Abram scooped up some family members and moved to there. Now, did he take everybody else in his family? It's possible, and they just weren't mentioned because they're not important to the story here. It's quite possible that he packed up lock, stock, and barrel and moved everything up there. We don't know. and the days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran. So that's where Terah, Abram's father, died. we know that God is going to, as soon as we get into chapter 12, because God tells Abram to move, we know that God is going to start working on an individual people group, and his dealings are going to be through this individual people group. Up to this point in time, God has dealt with the human race as a whole, right? Using certain individuals, but dealing with the human race as a whole. Now he's going to change directions and work through an individual people group that's going to come through Abram.
It's interesting you say, God is going to start working through an individual, but what you just shared with us today, this genealogy from Shem down to
right.
God was already
right.
Putting the pieces in place.
Right, yep. Preparation ahead.
We are for the documentation
yes.
of what God's work was.
Right, right. Just like the information earlier in Genesis, this gives credence to the validity of this information here because we've got specific dates, specific times, specific events.
I just wanted to say that he doesn't stop working through others.
No. Right, right. But we're going to see kind of a change. Instead of dealing with the entire human race as a whole, he's going to start working through the Israelites as a people group more. Okay, Lord bless you this morning. You're dismissed.